Penn versus TOA 13-3658. You may proceed, Mr. Blank.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Clinton Blank, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Chung Nin. He respectfully asks this court to reverse the grant of summary judgment in favor of the appellee, TOA USA LLC. And there are two reasons for that. Number one is that TOA treated Mr. Nin, who is a gentleman of Chin ethnicity from Myanmar, formerly Burma, less favorably than similarly situated American-born associates. And secondly, TOA retaliated against Mr. Nin for opposing the company's repeated failure to give Chin associates team leader positions at its metal stamping facility. And Your Honors, this case is about an employer's unfair treatment and termination of its employee. In December of 2009, Mr. Nin spoke out in favor or support of himself and fellow Chin associates who applied for team leader positions. Now, the team leader is not a high position in the company. It's the next step up from associate. It's a basic hourly position with some added responsibilities. And Chin associates made up nearly 23% of the workforce at that point. Yet, before he spoke out about this in December of 2009, no Chin associate in the company's nine-year history had ever been a manager, a supervisor, or even a team leader in the plant. And TOA didn't like that Mr. Nin disrupted the status quo, essentially, and at the first opportunity it had, albeit 12 months later, they removed the thorn from its side.
Well, now, you said that they unevenly applied their sexual harassment policy, and really the only other comparator you have engaged in conduct of a sexual nature. He wasn't fired right away, but he was fired, right?
That's correct, Judge. I think
without being given a chance to correct his behavior.
Yes, but looking at this particular case with Mr. Nin, Judge, we're not talking about sexual harassment. That's a leap and a conclusion that this company drew for its own convenience. His behavior doesn't amount to any type of sexual harassment under any type of definition of the term. Mr. Nin put his fingers together and made a kissing sound. He sang Huckleberry Hound's theme song, Oh My Darling, one time. He said that was a quick one. These are not things that amount to sexual harassment.
He said that was a quick one after a man and woman, remind me of the incident, I think they stepped to the side or they both went somewhere at the same time, the implication being that something sexual
happened. The company's implication, yes, Your Honor. Not my clients, and not the complainants. The alleged victim in this case, Ms. Brock, never made any type of implication or complaint that he was sexually harassing her. She testified that she
knew.
But
there's nothing that requires that, is there? For the victim to come forward?
No, not at all. For a company violation of a policy, though, Judge, I think you have to implicate that somehow sex enters into it, that she was asked to come to the back room or perform some act or otherwise. None of that happened in this case. This is grade school stuff, Judge, for lack of a better term. And she knew that. She called it childish teasing. That's how she characterized it. She never said anything about sexual harassment. She said she knew what it was, and that's not what was happening here. It was the company who wanted to implicate that particular policy violation in this case, but certainly not the victim and not any of the witnesses that they interviewed on her behalf. None of those three gentlemen back up any types of complaints of sexual harassment or untoward terms or unwelcome sexual conduct or anything that the actual policy prohibits. They bring up other things to the side of it as an, oh, by the way, it seems like. There was no tie to any sexual behavior, any misconduct, anything of that sort in the case involving my client. I think with these four American-born comparators that we had to look at, Judge, you have to look at whether they are similarly situated. I think we're dealing with a global company policy, not job performance issues. And this policy prohibits harassment on the basis of race, sex, national origin, sexual orientation, religion, age, disability, things that are familiar in this instance. There's nothing said about teasing. There's nothing said about childish behavior, anything of that sort. They all were terminated by the same decision maker. They all were subject to that same policy, which is a general employment policy. And they all engaged in similar conduct, but when you really look at what these four comparators did versus my client, his conduct pales in comparison.
Isn't Mr. Smith the only comparator who's really similarly situated, who was fired for violating the sexual harassment, sexual conduct policy?
I disagree with that, Judge, and here's why. Smith is a sexual harasser, there's no doubt. What he did was patently vulgar and rude and everything of the sort. But we are the ones who requested of TOA to tell us who else has been terminated according to this particular policy, who's been terminated for harassment or creating a hostile work environment. And they're the ones who put up these four people. We didn't come up with these on our own or guess about who they were or what they were about. They were offered up by the company as people who violated the same policy that my client did. And the policy...
I'm not sure how broad your request to them was if the others were terminated for engaging in other types of harassment, but the policy here that's at issue is the sexual harassment one. And I don't see the other comparators other than Mr. Smith being similar.
I respectfully disagree with that, Judge, because the conduct they engaged in violated a policy that allegedly that this company applies in not an even manner. They claimed that Mr. Reed,
but all these individuals, as I understand it, there were issues with them fighting, right?
Fighting, verbally abusive.
Verbal harassment.
And physical, Judge. Things far more serious.
Right. Nothing of a sexual nature, though.
And neither was my client. To do this with his fingers, Judge, and make a kissing noise, that's not sexual harassment. I mean, that's a leap by this company. To sing "Oh My Darling" as a John Ford movie, "My Darling Clementine," that's not sexual harassment. And the victim didn't take it that way. The company told her it was sexual harassment, and she disagreed. There was no investigation of that that amounted to a discovery of evidence that showed sexual harassment in any manner. It's a leap that the company made to fit its needs. You'll note in their affidavits for summary judgment, for example, the employees never used the term sexual harassment. They never used the term gender-based harassment. They just used harassment in two occasions in those affidavits. It's very artfully written, but they don't use the term sexual harassment in these materials because they don't believe it. They can't support it.
Do you have any cases to support your argument that a temporal gap of 1 year could be sufficient to support a causal connection?
Yes, Your Honor. I cited a case, I believe McKinsey in my brief, that gives examples of cases from other districts where the temporal gap was 12 months, 11 months, 13 months. But the gap itself, issue of fact, requires evidence of other suspicious activity on behalf of the employer to kind of corroborate or ride along with that factual determination.
In the cases you cited, there was always something more.
Yes. And in this case, there's something more as well, Judge. That's our convincing mosaic, as they say, of evidence regarding the contradictions and the inconsistencies in TOA's investigation of my client's claim. They want to add on any number of subversion claims, aggression, intimidation by my client that they never investigated, they never looked into. They just took it at face basis from these witnesses who offered this up out of nowhere, apparently, because no one ever complained about that about him. This is his first report of any misconduct in 3 years.
Is there any evidence in the record that when they confronted your client that he denied this activity?
Yes, he flatly denied it. In his, we'll call it his exit interview with Mr. Clayton, he said, "I didn't do any of this. Bring the witnesses. Who said that about me?" He was very upset about that.
He wanted the witnesses brought in, but is there evidence that he denied it?
I think that's the fact. He, Mr. Clayton, indicates that he denied the wrongdoing and complained about it. And I'm running into my time here, Judge. But any other questions about this? I'd be happy to talk a little bit.
Thank you.
Thanks, Judge.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Tobias Schleter. I'm here on behalf of TOA, the defendant appellee. Your Honors, no reasonable jury could conclude that Mr. Nin was terminated on the basis of his national origin or because he complained about promotions. Respectfully request that you affirm summary judgment in favor of TOA in this case. Mr. Nin's appeal is based on his apparent disagreement with TOA's investigation and his belief that he should have had progressive discipline. But Mr. Nin's metaphysical doubts about the facts of the case is not evidence.
Well, he also really challenges the evidence and says it's really not sexual harassment. This is very, very thin. And you would concede this isn't like the typical sexual harassment case.
Your Honor, and it's an important point. Mr. Nin argues that it's not sexual harassment. What matters under the law is whether the company believed it was sexual harassment, and it did here. Ms. Brock complained about sexual harassment. Her comments appear on page 6, where she told Mr. Nin several times to stop. He did not. She, of our brief, when I refer to page 6, she said, "Joe, stop it. Leave me alone." She even pleaded, and this is her deposition testimony, "Joe, that was enough. Please stop. You know, leave me alone." And he taunted, and he wouldn't drop it. And he did more than make kissy noises. He made comments about Miller, who's the other associate, and her being together. He made comments about suggestive comments after seeing them together, saying that that was a quick one. His conduct went on and on and on by Brock's testimony for 4 to 6 weeks until finally, and this is her quote, she just wanted the harassment to stop, the teasing and taunting to stop. The company took that complaint and it investigated it. And it investigated by interviewing Ms. Brock, who complained not only about the sexual harassment, but she complained about his threatening behavior, and she complained that he had instructed other employees to work slower so they could get overtime. The company then interviewed Asuncion Fajardo, who confirmed and corroborated Ms. Brock's testimony or complaint about Mr. Nin's aggressive behavior. The company interviewed Steve Miller, who corroborated his own feelings of uncomfortability and his witness to Mr. Nin's statements and that he perceived to be sexual in nature. But at the end of the day, Mr. Nin can attack with his belief all that he wants about whether or not this constituted sexual misconduct. The fact, and under the law, what matters is whether the company believed it to be true. Had the company done nothing, we may be up here today on Ms. Brock's complaint that the company didn't investigate and didn't address her complaint of harassment and of these other issues. The evidence and the undisputed evidence here is an opposite with the legal attack. There's no prima facie case, as the Your Honors seem to have focused on. There's no real, true, similarly situated comparator.
Well, why aren't the employees who were disciplined for fighting similarly situated to Nin when TOA's own policy listed both fighting and violation of the anti-harassment policy as causes for immediate termination? So they both fall in that immediate termination category.
The immediate termination category is provided in the policy. One of the things is sexual harassment, and that's what was focused on. That's point one. But point two is they were terminated for the violent behavior. their earlier conduct didn't relate to violence or related to arguments on the factory floor. So they're distinguished in their alignment with Mr. Nin, in that they engaged in violent behavior, and they were, too, terminated. As Your Honors pointed out, Mr. Smith, the only close comparator who engaged in similar misconduct statements, and the company believed them to be as such, terminated him immediately following his investigation. There's no question, I think, on the record that these comparators are not similarly situated, and to the extent that they were all treated exactly like Mr. Nin. Further, there's no evidence to support pretext here. There's no evidence that the company didn't believe in good faith and its legitimate non-discriminatory business reason for terminating Mr. Nin. There's no evidence of lies. There's no evidence that the investigation was flawed other than Mr. Nin's belief that it's flawed. He does not disagree. He does not suggest that Mr. Clayton, the sole decision maker, thought what was lying and when he was conducting the investigation. He does not suggest or assert that any of the witnesses lied about the conduct that happened and that was corroborated. That Mr. Clayton specifically factored in Mr. Nin's non-responsiveness in what counsel characterizes an exit interview is very important here, because it wasn't an exit interview. It was an opportunity for Mr. Nin to address the allegations presented to him. He did not, by his own admission. He demanded to see the witnesses. He denied the claims, demanded to see the witnesses, but engaged in no discussion. He was defiant, by all accounts, by Mr. Clayton and by Ms. Capps, the HR representative that was there. It cannot be said as a matter of law that the investigation was inadequate, or that it was unsupported, or that the company didn't follow its own policies here. And the policies provide that it can allow progressive discipline, but in instances of sexual misconduct, it can skip to the end and say that he's done. And it, in good faith, based on the record in front of it of Ms. Brock and two other witnesses, concluded that he committed the conduct at issue. Now, in the briefing, I just want to address this quickly on pretext. Counsel points to the Coleman decision as supportive of his case. But the Coleman decision is almost a textbook pretext case. There, you have two individuals who were white men who held down another man on the legs, a black man, and put a knife to his throat. And they were given 7 days leave or a suspension. They were not terminated. Ms. Coleman, on the other hand, expressed homicidal ideation in a conversation with her psychiatrist well before the events here. The company doesn't find out until later, and on the same day that it finds out, it also gets a report from her doctor that she is stable and that she has no homicidal ideation. Further, the company put on testimony in that case that it never felt threatened by Ms. Coleman. So the facts there are very inopposite with the facts of pretext or lack of pretext here. Again, there's no evidence to undermine the company's good faith belief other than Nin's subjective belief. Further, Mr. Nin's attempt to resurrect comparator evidence to support pretext defies the well-established precedent in this court that falls under Our Lady and the case that led to Our Lady, Troop versus May Department Store, and the 7 or 8 district court decisions that cite to Troop and Our Lady since. And that is, pretext evidence, or comparator evidence, is not proper for the pretextual analysis unless it shows that there's systematically more favorable treatment towards similarly situated employees. That evidence is not here. Mr. Nin can point to no Seventh Circuit case that calls into question Troop, Our Lady, or any of the district court cases supporting this standard. Finally, the district court correctly concluded that Mr. Nin could not establish the prima facie case for retaliation, specifically on causation. Again, he can point to no Seventh Circuit case that suggests that a year is sufficient to prove causation. And he doesn't prove anything extra relating to this case.
You make the statement at some point that the one-year gap negates causal connection. Do you have any case law to support that, as opposed to just not supporting it, that it actually negates it?
I believe we addressed that in our briefing, and if we don't, I'd request an opportunity to plead that. But I believe that case law is in our brief, Your Honor. The fact of the matter is that the well-established law in the circuit, without referring to a specific case at the moment, is that without causation, the retaliation claim fails. And Nin doesn't point to any other arguments of additional conduct. There's nothing suspicious about what the company did with the investigation, why it made the decision it did. And Mr. Nin's attempt in his reply brief to supply the court with all sorts of statistical, anecdotal analysis of the Chin-speaking population does not identify any Chin-speaking employee who applied for a position or who was qualified for a position. It speaks to the decision in Bell versus EPA, where very specifically tailored it to applicants who were qualified for a job, and the court found that was relevant for pretext. That isn't the case here. So at the end of the day, Your Honors, appreciate your time. Thank you for your consideration. We ask that you affirm the district court's decision awarding summary judgment in favor of TOA.
Thank you, Mr. Sheeter.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Blank have? No time. Thank you, Mr. Blank. We'll take the case under advisement.